welcome to Creative Dicks. My name is Lucy Buttons. I am here with my co-host and co-producer, Jonelle.
What up?
And via Skype, we have very special guest, Scooter Pie.
Hello.
Hi, Scooter. So you and I have been friends forever.
15 years.
Oh, my goodness. 15 years.
Yeah.
So
that's how old I am.
Nice try, Jonelle. So Scooter has been working as a dom for how many years now?
On and off for 10 years. I've been a professional dominatrix.
Nice. 10 years. Do you get like a badge or something at that point?
No, but I'm trying to imagine what would be on such a badge.
And what it would be made out of, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, leather, I would imagine.
Ooh.
Jonelle, are you into that?
You know what? I'm one of those people that I'm not. I don't like a lot of...
Are you sure? Have you ever tried?
Not professionally. Like, in previous relationships, they wanted to spice things up, and they would want to try to pretend or research what... being a dom sub, daddy dom, or whatever things that they've read on some paper or listened to Dan Savage. But I've always just wanted the romance of things. So this is going to be very educational for me. I am very excited for our listeners who has not seen or heard of Scooter Pie. She's probably one of the most gorgeous people I've seen on stage, also in the burlesque scene. So they're going to be in for a treat once you guys listen to this and hop on all of her social media and stuff. Just got to do it.
Absolutely.
Hey.
So Scooter, you've been a host also of burlesque shows and a performer on and off for for a lot of years.
For a long time.
One of the first performers I actually saw in New York City when we came to support your show. I remember you tap dancing.
Yep, that was a thing. Ooh. So you...
It's like you closed a door on a session. So how did you get into being a dom?
Well, a bunch of years ago, I worked at, it was then known as Toys and Babeland, the wonderful sex toy store known as Babeland. And some of the women who worked there, they also, moonlighted as pro-doms. Mm-hmm. And I ended up being roommates with one of these women, and she had a client that she wanted to see from our apartment, and his fantasies that he wanted to have, a less experienced, friend of hers watch and learn some techniques from her. So I was perfect for it, and I got paid for it, and I kind of caught the bug because it was really fun and kind of exciting and just interesting. And about a couple years later, I ended up deciding to go play for myself.
Okay. And do you have a specialty?
I do. I think for myself, because I've kind of gone in and out of doing it professionally for the past decade, I get different specialties. Which is fun because I'm a Gemini, so I have different interests at different times. Right now, I'm really into medical fetish stuff.
Okay, what is that? So, like Jonelle has no fucking idea what that means, and a lot of our listeners have no idea what that means. So, break it down.
Okay, medical fetish is sort of intense to jump right into if we're just talking about kink. So I feel like I should talk about something a little bit more gentle first. Medical stuff is... let's see, it can involve play piercing, it can involve sounds. I don't know if you, that's when a metal rod is inserted into the urethra.
Okay.
Jonelle, I wish you could see it now.
I'm squirming. That's kind of one of my nightmares.
And clenching.
Maybe I should get away from that because I don't want him to be scared.
No, do this. This is fun. I'm actually very, very intrigued.
Yeah, he wants to know all the things. We're going to go full force. This is for you.
Right. We're balls to the wall, and I'm stomping on them.
Yeah.
medical stuff, it's fun because you get to do it in, the medical fetish room, and you get to kind of, play doctor, but not in a typical sensual way, in more of a way that can draw blood. And I think that's fun because I haven't really focused on the more intense, edgy kind of aspects of BDSM before. I'm learning.
Did you have to go through any particular certification or training? Because play piercing, that's kind of dangerous. Sticking stuff in people's urethra, not only painful, but also dangerous. So tell us a little about that.
Well, when I first started, I was trained by the first dungeon. That's what the places of work are called. In New York City, I worked at, was called Ball and Chains. And there was, the owner was named Mistress Aphrodite, and she was just unbelievable. She looked like a giant Barbie doll, wore like hot pink latex. And she taught me a lot of stuff. And then over the years, just with different DOMs I've worked with, or different dungeon owners who are female, like, taught me stuff. And also on my own, like, I'm interested. Like, I'm not super what they call, like, lifestyle kinky in real life. I'm a little bit, but I'm kind of a more boring vanilla person these days in my real life, and that's okay. But I've, you know, read a lot of books, watched how-to videos, and gone to workshops. So I'm always trying to learn more, which is one of the things I really love about the job. Is there's always more to
new challenges.
Exactly.
So when you say lifestyle kinky, that means someone who's dominant all the time in their personal relationships as well as at work?
Correct. That would be, a lifestyle person would be somebody who just does it in their personal life and isn't necessarily a professional, although there is some crossover sometimes. It's like people who go to fetish parties or maybe have full-time DS relationships, you know, kind of with their aiming for in 50 Shades of Grey and got completely wrong. So don't use that as an example for anything. That's just, no, like, what was going on there was more like abuse, in my opinion, and many others.
Okay, thank you for sharing that from your professional experience. So do you find, working with all these other DOMs, that they tend to be dominant in their personal relationships, or they're more submissive, or what do you find?
I have found that there have been a number of pro DOMs who are submissive in real life, but I think just as there are so many flavors of sexuality, there isn't, like, you can't just say across the board. I think, like, for a lot of people, including mine, like, sexuality and sexual proclivities are an ever-evolving thing.
Yes, yes. And are there people that are pro-subs?
I've actually done some pro-sub stuff, and currently I will do switch sessions, which means it's kind of like half dom, half sub, but only with clients that I really trust and feel comfortable with. But that's like a whole other thing. If you want to get a really good story of a pro-subs experience, my friend Reverend Jen wrote a book called June about her experience in the early 90s when she was in her early 20s working at Pandora's Box, only as a pro-sub. So,
okay.
Some interesting stories.
So you're into the medical stuff now, but when you started off, you did that three-person session, and then what was in the middle?
Oh, gosh, so much. Just a rainbow of stuff. I mean, there's other kinds of sessions I love doing now, too. I'm really into doing strap-on sessions. I think they're very intimate, and they make me feel incredibly powerful, although they can be a little gross sometimes, which is why butt cleanliness is very important.
Enemas, you mean?
Oh, yeah. I always, like, I try to give them enemas myself just to make sure, you know, they're clean to my specifications. I love doing role play stuff. That can be fun because it's like acting and it can be just really silly and ridiculous. I like doing feminization and cross-dressing stuff. That can be just really, because the thing is, like, I find I don't get sexually turned on by doing these sessions, but I can feel a lot of joy, and I can feel a lot of, I love the power exchange and just the energy exchange, like when, you know, somebody is really into it and they're responding, the give and take is just, it can be really beautiful. Like, even if I'm beating somebody's ass really hard with a flogger, or, you know, I can feel their enjoyment of it, and it's just, it feels good, like doing a really important service.
That's good. And
because it's not something they can do in their regular life.
For a lot of people, there is that shame involved and that secrecy, which is unfortunate, but it helps me get business. I don't want to be making money off of people's shame, but I want to help smash it. But unfortunately, there is still this stigma. Like, clients will come to me and be like, do you think this is weird? I feel like there's something wrong with me. Like, and just to be able to help them and be like, no, dude, this is fun. And there's, like, all kinds of, people are kinky. Like, people have fetishes and don't even realize it. I bet both of you have some kind of, even if slight fetish. I think I know what yours is, Lucy. Hey.
What do you think mine is?
Balls.
I do like balls. Scooter loves that I love balls. She finds it so entertaining because she doesn't like them.
I don't dislike balls. I just don't like them the way that you do.
You like to tie them up and stomp on them.
Sure. I mean, not, you know, I can be nice to them too, but doing CBT, which stands for cock and ball torture, can be very satisfying.
Yeah. Well, so stemming off from that particular statement that you said, with shame, also with doing it in secrecy, is that the thing that makes it a little bit more fun, because it's a little taboo still in society, and you know, how do you kind of tackle that with your or clients and personal life?
That's a good question. Well, I'd say I feel bad that there's shame and there's stigma, because I you know, it's sad if somebody is feeling dark about it or is feeling those shameful feelings afterward, or like there's something wrong with them. It would be great if people could be open with their partners about their kinks. I know in some cases there are agreements where, you know, a guy will, like, his wife won't want to participate, but will be totally okay with him going to see it done, because there's no vanilla sex that's being exchanged at all. It's just, you know, working out the BDSM type fantasy. So that can kind of help their relationship. But I guess there is, I do love the aspect of the job that it is still taboo and it is kind of secret, and people are shocked and surprised by hearing what I do. So that's fun.
But do you have a follow up question?
No, because I'm still kind of like of the idea that I've had a lot of dominatrix friends as well, but right. not mm-hmm. as close to really tackle the details in which, like for you personally, Scooter, was there a time that, you know, in your career, did it help your personal relationships, or it kind of gets, you know, you want to, sometimes I don't want to bring stuff that I do at work at home. So I don't know if it's the same working mm-hmm. as a dominatrix or being a sex worker. Like, if I'm very, very kinky at work, I want my sex at home super vanilla. Or is it even more kinky at home because I can get to explore more with somebody that I really care for?
That's another good question. And also, I want to add that in my work persona, I'm known as Mistress Rita and not Scooter Pie. But you can call me Scooter right now. I just
Mistress
want to get that
Rita.
Plug out for myself.
Yeah, in case anybody Rita. Wants to find you, where could they employ your services?
Well, currently I live in Philadelphia, and I work out of a lovely space in Center City called Destiny's Chamber, destinieschamber.com. But I also definitely will travel. I miss sessioning in New York. There's just something about the energy there that's extra special.
So they could contact you where?
What's that?
Are you on like any?
Oh yeah. I'm on Twitter, Mistress Rita XO.
Okay. Perfect.
We're gonna plug the shit.
Oh no,
out of
I'm
that.
Sorry. I think it's just Mistress Rita X.
Okay, Mistress Rita X.
Find out and let us know. So to answer Jonelle's question.
To answer his question, I've actually experienced that in a variety of ways because I've been in a number. As Lucy knows, because she's known practically like everyone I've dated in my adult life, we've known each other a long time. I've been in a variety of different types of relationships while I've done this kind of work. Some that are more vanilla, where the guys just are totally separate from it, and like, no, like I never had to keep it a secret that was what I did, but they just weren't really interested in knowing about it, even though they were supportive. I've been in like really kinky relationships also. Where it was, sometimes it was almost like I was, you know, getting into that persona at home. And that was fun because I feel like I really strengthened my skill set during those times.
Right.
So I've kind of had both types of experiences. Although I find where I'm at right now, you know, I have like a wonderful boyfriend and we have like a kind of more traditional personal life. And that's good for me right now at the point I'm at, because I think it would be exhausting to me personally. To be doing like session type stuff, play at home and at work, if I'm being dominant, because it can take just a lot of focus and a lot of.
Yeah, and you're not, like knowing you personally, you're not the most dominant person.
I'm not.
I don't think so. I think you're very agreeable. I'm usually the dominant one when we hang out.
Well, I'll tell you though, that's part of why I love the job, is because it's helped me build confidence that I get to put on that persona, because I know it's not really who I am.
Yeah. So because Jonelle's still kind of having a hard time grasping this, I can tell by his
expression.
I'm
not having a hard time. It's just like, this is a world that I don't think I will be an active participant in. I will dip my toe, definitely.
And he finds it interesting, because when I had those slaves, he was like, he didn't get it. He didn't even like the term slave for them. No. He was object. He would
don't
object
objectify
to it.
Us. But we're not pieces of meat.
That was that was their term. But so if a first timer were to come in, how does that go? So they come in and they're like, I'm looking for a dog. Like, what happens then? What's the conversation?
A first time. Oh, okay. We do a consultation. If somebody is interested and is curious and maybe has never done this kind of stuff before, they'll like send an email or contact the space owner and they'll book an appointment. And there's never like walk-ins or anything like that, but they can book same day if they're legit. So I'd go, I'd welcome them in and sit them in a room, and before, I'm not like in character or anything like that, and we just have a little chat for a few minutes about what his interests are. And I say him because most of the time it is male-identified people, although I have been lucky enough to have some clients who were female, and that was fun, and some couples that were male and female. But anyway, I'll ask him about what he's interested in, what experience he has, what expectations are, if he has any injuries, and I'll make it clear that, like, there's, you know, I say nothing that ends in the word job is going to be happening, if he's unclear about that. And, yes, and then basically it's like, I don't need to get a huge laundry list of a million things he wants to do, because if it's an hour session, I'll just kind of focus on a few, and then that'll leave him wanting more and want to come back and see me again.
Okay. Cool.
And since we're in the same topic, and we always love hearing good and bad stories, maybe you can share a couple of, once we start with worst or best.
I mean, are you asking her for her personal stories or of sessions?
Hey, we're gonna dealer's choice. She's our guest. You can tell us whatever fun. So let's start with misery, because we always love misery.
We do love
here.
Misery.
So let's start with your one of your worst experiences.
Funny worst, not fun, horrifying.
Yeah, not horrifying.
I'll tell you guys. There in New York City in the Dom Society, there is a client who basically, it seems as though everyone has seen. He's been sessioning for probably about like 40 years, and for as far as I know, he's still doing it.
Wow.
And he is known as Mental Dental. And his fetish.
Shout out Mental Dental.
His fetish is, and asks, I swear, you can meet any Dom anywhere in New York City and they've probably seen him.
Okay, I gotta tell you, Pandora's still in the studio. She's just listening. She's not participating, but we just did a session with her.
She
and she's sitting here nodding her ass off.
Yeah, it's a bond that we all have. It's like, amazing. He brings his thing is he wants you to pretend to extract a specific tooth from his mouth, but not actually to do it. He brings in real Novocaine. We shoot him with Novocaine. And I'll tell you, I went to the dentist the other day. That fucking hurts. Getting Novocaine and it's not pleasant. And he has these ancient dental tools that he wants you to, like, use in quotes, like, pretend to use. And he'll be like, see this one tooth? There's just one tooth here. And, like, you have, like, rubber gloves on your hands and you have to pretend to be, like, a dentist, basically. He's been doing the same session, like, since the 70s, basically. Yeah. And it's not fun. Like, it's really boring.
It's, like, but, awkward and random.
It's like a rite of passage when you become a new dom. Like, on my third day, a lot of doms. There's a great movie about a professional dungeon in New York called Remedy that my friend Cheyenne made. And there's a depiction of him, fictionalized, but it's of him in the movie. And he's actually played by, in the movie, he's played by Flambeau. I don't know if you know him, but
he plays Mental Dental
in the movie.
That's hilarious.
Mental Dental.
And what's the best session you've ever had?
Oh my gosh, there have been so many good ones. Gosh, I'm trying to think if there's like a recent really fun one I can think of is when I got kind of into medical stuff. I did my friend, Mistress Isadora, otherwise known as burlesque performer Lil Steph. Shout out to her. We did a double session together, which was a lot of fun, with one of her regulars who visits her like every couple of months for like 4 hours. So she took me in for an hour, and we put a whole mess of medical staples in him, like all over. And it was just really fun because she and I don't see each other often, so we got to kind of just chat and catch up and stick a bunch of staples and needles in this guy, and he like loved it.
Did they stay in or you take them back out?
They take them out. There are some people who do, they will use like a scalpel and actually like cut you and staple you together.
I'm not
that advanced yet.
It seems
yet. It sounds like you have goals.
I do.
My goal is to staple somebody's cut skin.
But I feel like I should also touch on some of the less extreme aspects.
Yes.
Something as basic as spanking. Tease and denial, you know, when you're like a rope bondage, like tied with rope to the, like, you know, the wooden cross, the St. Andrew's cross, and like somebody is just like gently like touching your skin or like tweaking your nipples, or you're like blindfolded and it's just really gentle, but it's just very, it's like erotic torture. Like that counts as kinky stuff.
Would you do or that like, for the whole hour, or you do that and then you fuck them up the ass with a strap on?
A person. And like, you know, butt worship, trampling, or like boot worship, like that kind of stuff too. The stuff that isn't so invasive is a big part of it too.
So if it's boot worship, I mean, I made that as a joke, but do you do that the whole hour? They just like,
Hey man, if somebody has a fetish that intense, it's going to go by fast for them just doing that one thing. But that's somebody with a serious fetish.
So they're touching your boots, and your boots, you're rubbing them on them.
Yeah, basically. Wow. And that, it can get, you know, a little tedious, but if they're so into it, they're so focused and like they're not bored. But there's so many different types of clients too.
Yeah.
And so your regulars, how often do they come?
At this point, because I've only been doing this again, I'm getting established still here at Destiny's Chamber. I've only been there about 4 months. I only have like a couple of regulars right now. I have one that I see about every 2 weeks and one that I see about every week. And he's my favorite because I know you've probably heard about the dream of the financial slaves.
Oh, yes, know? We've talked about that. You know,
I feel like that's sort of a fantasy, but this guy is as close to it as I've ever seen, where he'll come in, I'll take his wallet, I'll take everything out of it, I'll throw it on the floor and send him out to the ATM to get me more money. And then I'll just do whatever I want with him for just, it could be a few minutes or it could be like an hour and a half, depending on what I feel like doing. Like, he's truly submissive, and I actually feel a lot of power, and I understand, like, I really feel dominant with him because I get that power from him, because there's a lot of clients who aren't actually really submissive, and it's, you know, you work with it because it's a service job. We got to face what it is. Mm-hmm. But with the guys that are truly submissive, it can be really fun.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of want a financial submissive right now.
Don't fall.
That sounds amazing.
I thought I found one.
Oh, I want to hear your story.
Well, because on Bumble, you do find some weirdos. And uh-huh. I found a couple of guys that wanted to be subs. Mm-hmm. They wanted to be my slaves specifically. And I did. I went out with one of them a couple of times. And then I did control his masturbation schedule for like a week.
Did you like doing that?
I did. Because my whole I'm bossy and opinionated. And my whole life I've been being told that I was too bossy and too opinionated. And to finally meet someone who liked that, I was like, well, that's interesting. Because it's, you know, we all have things we don't sort of like about ourselves or are told not to like about ourselves. So to be able to embrace it was interesting to me. But I also, you know, he talked about, what's the contraption they wear on their dicks?
Oh, the cock cage.
Yeah, he had a cock cage that he bought for himself that he had at home, uh-huh. And he said he just would wear it around his apartment. And
did he give you a key?
No, we didn't get to that. We didn't.
Aww.
No, but
I like that.
You would. But to me, that like was not attractive, because even though I am sort of a dominant person, I like that sort of like manly man thing.
That's what I was going to say. Like, you are one of those people who is in real life dominant, but kind of, you can be more submissive sexually. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on like my mood that day and what's going on and the person I'm dealing with. So the fun thing about the dick mission has been that I've been able to explore all those things. And so if I would start talking to someone and that was what they said, you know, was their thing, then that was, you know, I would just go along with it and see how it went. So the first one, we went out a couple of times. We did not have the same political views, and he was trying to sort of boss me and not about what he wanted to be. He had like a puppy thing. He wanted to be a puppy.
What did you think of that?
Oh, we just lost sound on Scooter somehow. John L., can you say something, Scooter?
Hello.
Oh.
Janelle's having some technical issues.
We're good, we're good. My bad. Technical
Am I
issues.
Back?
There you go.
Okay, now you're back. The puppy thing I wasn't interested in, and it's funny because I thought of you, because I remember you telling me years ago that you had this puppy session. I said, what the hell is a puppy session? And I remember you telling me that you were going to chew up food and spit it into his mouth and he was going to eat it.
That's more like a bird, yep. though.
And I said that was a bird session. That's probably where you got that joke from. I told you this before. And so that was not the kind of puppy stuff this man at least described wanting to do. He wanted to like do tricks, and I was like, what tricks are you going to do? Like, you're a person, so if I tell you to sit and stay,
you can sit and stay.
You understand me, so it's not a trick with a person. But I did sort of think it would be funny to get, he wanted to clean my house and do things like that, so I thought it would be funny to get like a tent, like an old gross tennis ball, and throw it across the apartment and make him chase it on his hands and knees.
Did you do it?
No, I didn't want him to come over to my house. I wasn't interested in him, and I wasn't being paid for it. That's the thing. He basically wanted a dom.
Oh, you weren't being paid for it. Okay.
No, he thought this was a personal relationship, and for me, it was funny for like a couple of weeks, whatever. But that wasn't the one that was into the financial domination. The slave two. So the first one, he was a failure because the first task I gave him was to shave his beard, and he flat out refused.
Oh, no.
I know. And you know how I feel about that. And then he was upset I wouldn't kiss him. I'm like, well, you wouldn't shave your beard. So I thought that was a good tease. But basically, I called him slave fail.
Oh.
And then shortly after, I found the second slave. And that was the one that I felt like was good for financial domination because he was going to send me regular payments. He said he got really stimulated by our date. We went on a second date and I made him go and get different things. And he'd purchased some underwear before, and he mentioned this a couple of times. And then I said, what kind of underwear are you purchasing? And he told me he had bought some pink frilly panties and that he had actually worn them on our second date. And then after our second date.
See, that's exciting to me.
Yeah, you like that stuff. I was fucking disgusted. I was like, that was so gross. Why are you wearing that? And then he told me that he slept on the floor in them afterwards because it made him feel safe. And, I wonder if his roommate ever knew that he did that. Like, did he ever accidentally...
Wait, he had a roommate?
He had a roommate. And what he really wanted to do, and this is why he was a real financial slave, what he really wanted to do was to live in a cage in my apartment and pay me, like, he offered me something like $2,700 a month just so he could rent this cage in my apartment and that he would clean it, whatever. But the thing is, there's catches to all that, John L. So he wanted to clean the apartment, but he wanted to clean it like in his pink panties only, or like he liked wearing garters and stockings and a little maid uniform while I ridiculed him and told him what a sissy he was and then watched him like masturbate while I like told him he was, you know, a piece of shit basically. So that's not my thing.
This is the thing I've realized, that there always is kind of like a catch, because when I've wanted like personal slaves, or like when I was wanting like personal kinky relationships, I can only speak from my experience. They ended up just kind of wanting to top from the bottom, wanting things a very specific way, and it ended up just kind of being too much work for me.
And that's what I thought about the first one. But I did, you know, I would always check in with Scooter because I knew she'd known that you were the first person to tell me about an errand slave. Can you tell everybody what an errand slave is?
Ostensibly, it is someone who will go do your errands for you for free, or also give you money for it. But when I had one like for a little while, it was great because he'd like go do my grocery shopping, and then I ran out of ideas, so I had him buy some makeup for my friend Rachel. but then he just like everything had to be on his schedule, and then he started to seem put out by it, so it just wasn't worth it anymore.
Yeah, that seems to be like the stories that Lucy mentioned to us. It's like, oh, I found a slave, but in the end, it was like they were asking for something so specific that it's the other way around.
Yeah, so the first slave, he thought he was an errand slave, and so the first thing I asked him to do was to go and get my dry cleaning. And my dry cleaning, I have this dry cleaner that I use that's like on First Avenue on the Upper East Side, very hard to get to, but he's good with the vintage stuff. So I asked him to go there and pick it up, and he said, well, do you have an account there? And was asking me basically if I'd already paid for it because he didn't want to get into a financial situation. And it wasn't that I was certainly curious of how that was going to go down, especially having known your stories, but I just got sort of annoyed by the whole thing because it became work then for me to set it up, and at that point I might as well just go and get my own fucking dry cleaning, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that, I think that's kind of what you're thinking about, and even like food.
Yeah, I remember the only benefit that happened was one of your slaves got Allegra
tacos.
Oh, no, Allegra got bagels, right? At one point?
No, that was from our friend.
That wasn't even it then.
But I think he might be into that too. But no, he did bring me tacos one time. The first slave fail, I let him come to the outside of my building. And I told him before, I was like, I'm not letting you upstairs. And he said he understood. And that's the whole thing, is that they want to not have sex. These people didn't want any sex. They liked the withholding. But even though he knew that, he got upset when I wouldn't let him up. And I was just like, okay, well, bye then. Like, And then he still was texting me for a long time because he liked that back and forth. And I was like, no, like, this didn't work and you wouldn't follow my directions, so fuck off. But he was still like, but I miss talking to you and stuff like that. And then, yeah, he was just a big disappointment. You know that.
I've just got to tell you, Lucy, with your whole dick mission, I'm really proud of you because you've really been pushing your own boundaries and expanding your horizons. Hey. And I've known you for a really long time. I mean, you're extremely young, so you're basically like a newborn when I met you. But, you know, like just seeing you grow and try new things has been very exciting for me.
And still trying.
To live vicariously.
Trying and sharing to the six people that download our podcast.
Yay. And I will add, I was thinking of other things like we could discuss, and I was remembering like back. Do you remember that time when we almost had a three-way?
Yes, I do.
She told me this story.
I did. Oh, I was going to say, Janelle's going to get so excited right now. Two redheads.
My God.
So
my hair's black now, though, and I know that you probably don't like it, but I like it.
Whatever makes you happy, I'm happy for you. But I do love your red hair. But so
we'll get back there one
me
day.
Too, me
yes.
too.
Yes. So. So let's see, how many years ago? A lot of years ago. We won't
yeah,
name
we'll
how many
say a
years
lot.
Ago. Yeah. I had this apartment that had a front yard and a backyard. And that was back when I used to like to throw sort of house parties, even in New York City. And so we had a whole bunch of people over. And
it's a huge party.
It was kind of a huge party. We grilled out. I made some WAP. Do you know what WAP is, Jonelle?
What the fuck is WAP?
What does it say? WAPACHULI?
What's a WAPACHULI?
I don't remember what it is.
It's like party. Maybe it might be called Party Punch. So it's like.
Oh, okay. Okay,
it's right. Like fruit juices, and it's every kind of booze you have around, basically, and then fruit. So it's like poor man's sangria-ish. There's
Got
no
it.
Wine in it. There might be, but you wouldn't know.
Drunk
so,
punch. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, you put it in a bathtub, mm-hmm. and everybody drinks it, whatever.
Wait, in the bathtub?
Well, not really.
Okay.
I made it in one of those.
Oh, like, yeah, like she'd really put like something to drink in her bathtub.
Yeah, the girl with the OCD? Come on.
No, I'm just saying I wouldn't even drink it.
And so it was a party in the yard. It wasn't a party. So anyway, so I made that.
I can still picture this like it was yesterday.
Aw, so sweet. And I made like the watermelon soaked in booze, and we made Jello shots. Oof. Oh, my God.
I was inundated with booze options.
Well, I was a serious boozer then. Yeah. So that was like, I think I spent like $500 on booze for that party. And we really didn't have, I mean, we say it was a huge party, but maybe 30 people. I mean,
that's a huge party.
So, well, for New York standards. So,
for our backyard.
Yeah. So everybody came over and we drank all night and we were shit-faced. And at the time I was living with my boyfriend who I'd been with a long time. And yeah, towards the end of the night, we kind of almost had a threesome. And then he and I went into, it kind of ends sort of sad though. He and I went into our bedroom to discuss the terms and
I
passed
fell
out.
Waiting for them.
All of us passed out. The least climactic story of a threesome. That's
yeah,
probably.
But I think it's for the best, probably, because you know we've remained such good friends to this day.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you know, I tried to have another threesome recently.
Really, with who?
Strangers.
Oh, okay. That's amazing. Oh, okay.
I was on some website, and you know, like I do. Doing research for the podcast.
Yeah,
that's all
yeah,
it was.
Let's do it.
For Facebook, for the dick mission.
Quote research. All right.
And there were these two guys that were looking for a woman to have a threesome with. And I was like, okay, well, I'm curious. I haven't had one. I tried several times to have a threesome. For the last year, I've just
it's
been trying
to. It's worth a shot. You should do it at some point.
I've been trying. But now I'm going to get all these responses. But so. So I wrote back, you know, they clicked that they were like interested in me and I wrote back and we wrote back and forth and I actually did arrange to have drinks with them and I even went and one guy showed up.
That is not a threesome.
Yeah,
I'm not good
was
with
it
math.
A catfish situation?
I'm not sure. He had a ponytail. He was
Ew.
Pretentious but ugly. And I think he had facial hair. And I was like, well, where's your friend? Like, maybe your friend's cute. Where's your friend? He was like, he was very vague about everything. And I kept trying to ask him how it would work. And he never got to the point.
He didn't say, we're going to do the Eiffel Tower. And
you were obsessed with the Eiffel Tower.
It
oh,
was a funny joke.
You're talking about doing it with two guys.
Two
right?
guys, yeah.
Oh, see, okay. I always am like, I never did that, but I did. And I just forgot.
Oh, you did?
I was really drunk, so I didn't really remember, but I did.
Do you remember if you liked it or not?
It was just a little bit too much dick, too many dicks.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't Yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to having a threesome with a woman. So, but I probably wouldn't have a threesome with two women. I can't imagine that.
Okay.
But so
I can easily imagine.
That's the first time I ever had.
What's the first time you ever had?
No, the first thing I ever had was all with all women.
Okay.
Oh, three women. Good. So all three of you. Okay. That's interesting. Well, I guess that will be a little bit more comfortable than one guy and two women. Because I've always thought that was the standard.
There's no standard.
I know there's no standard, but like if you're going to say threesome, the first setup that you will have in your brain will be one guy and two women.
Well, first maybe that's where you have. Think of it.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. See, that's that. You know what? It's not even my vocabulary. What is threesome? I mean, I don't even know how many that is, but.
Three people.
Ah.
So are you the meat or the bread in that sandwich? Scooter.
Me?
Yeah.
With what? With
well, with all of the above. So if there's three
meat or the bread. I think I've been meat, bread, lettuce, and mayonnaise. I've had a lot.
But what's your favorite?
Oh, with three ways?
Yeah.
Gosh. I don't know. I think like the best situation, and maybe let me instead of saying my favorite, let me just like I'll give you some advice. I think in my
in case we ever have any
have been when I'm the guest with an already established couple where they're inviting me over, they already know how to do stuff with each other and they're psyched to have like a bonus guest, and then you like, you know, you get special attention and then like that's it.
So I correct me if I'm wrong, that's a unicorn, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I know a few things.
Because my ones where I've been in a couple and it's ranged everywhere from being like wonderful till I like tried breaking up with the person I was with in the middle of one because it went wrong.
Oh.
So there's, you know, it can go a lot of different
what
ways.
What went wrong?
Depending on your like mental health and stuff. Oh, the person, I don't want to get into the details.
Okay. Okay, no problem. So okay. So you're this unicorn. So I've heard of people that don't like that setup because I think it tends to go more towards one person or the other. You just feel like you were the meat in that sandwich and happy?
I was the amount of meat and I did this with like in a couple different instances.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was the amount of meat that I wanted to be. But I also thought it was cool to see, because in these instances, it was a couple of different couples at different times that had been together for, like, years.
Mm-hmm.
To, like, see people who are so comfortable with each other, like, fucking. Because, like, you don't get to see that ever, like, in real life, to, like, secretly witness that. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, most people's image of sexual intercourse will either be theirs or porn, which is
right.
You don't see other people's level of comfort, which is
right. You don't
always
see their own intimacy.
Yeah. So, I mean, the closest that I've had, well, I've had a couple of close calls, but, you know, close doesn't cut it, as usually Lucy says. But when I was in college, I was trying to develop my photography portfolio. A friend of mine, actually a teammate, wanted me to film him and his girlfriend. So I did, and it was actually, I thought it was going to be hot and kinky, and it's going to be me, the pervy guy in the corner, but no, it was actually, in the end, once we were cutting it up and making it not look like porn, it was actually really beautiful, because
aww,
at that point, they actually did love each other. I mean, in the back of my head, I was this, you know, nerdy little college dude thinking, like, I might get into this a little bit, and I might back off, because it's going to be two guys and a girl, but when, you know, I was there, had my own crappy little video camera. I was like, oh, you know what? They actually are in love, and they just want to, you know, vainly document their bodies when they were young and whatnot. But that's usually, and at that time, I was kind of sexually active too. So it was so different to see other people how they do it. Like, you know, kissing in real life is nowhere near what you see on TV.
Can you repeat that again for all of the people listening that don't get that?
Well, I mean, I've, you know, growing up in semi-sheltered Philippines too, it's like very conservative. All we have to see is what you see on TV and what you see in movies. And, you know, hopefully people just learn that your mouth and other people's mouth are not choreographed. So you need a certain level of comfort and practice, and it's not always going to be pretty.
And it's nonverbal communication.
Exactly.
Yes, all of absolutely. Sex. That's why what I like about dancing too. It's nonverbal communication, and it's so yeah. important. You have to wait and feel the other person and what they do, and then respond to that instead of just trying to do your own thing. That's right. where most people go wrong. They just like they have their moves, and they're just trying to do their moves, and they're not paying attention to how those moves are received mm-hmm. or what the other person's moves are.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, so, I think just excellent sex like advice for anyone can be in two words, and it's pay attention.
No. Absolutely.
I have a question for you too, going along with this kind of group sex thing. And no, I'm not hitting on you. Haha. It's okay. How many people do you think constitute an orgy?
Ooh.
When does it become an orgy? Because I know the answer.
wouldn't it be after a threesome, so a foursome or more?
I've always thought that.
Do you think four people means orgy?
I always thought that orgy starts at three, because it's more than two. So anything more than two will be an orgy. It's just a specific type of orgy, so threesome.
What's the correct number, Scooter?
Well, a very trusted friend and I were discussing this, and then we like acted it out. But it's five people.
Ooh.
There's a three-way, and then it's like, you know, a foursome is like, it's technically, it could be like two couples, but when you reach five, it's officially an orgy, as far as I'm concerned.
Because you can't pair up, there's always a threesome happening.
Yes.
Oh. I would have loved to have had an orgy.
No.
You would love to?
Yeah. No. I don't think I will
you
at this
have
point.
One. But... Have one at your bar.
Never say never, but so you, oh, how about you, Lucy? Is an orgy in your bucket list?
It's not in my bucket list, but I mean, it could be hot. The thing is, so once upon a time I performed at this swingers party, and I was hoping and expecting, and I did like some fetish convention too once upon a time, which was very eye-opening. We were there
that
together,
was with
Scooter.
Me.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
I learned a lot that weekend. Mm-hmm. So I had this expectation of both. And that's why I think it's fun that we have Scooter and we can talk about this, because I was under the impression at this sex party that there would probably be threesomes and orgies, and it would be kind of fun to like watch, especially as a performer. Because if you're there as a performer, people kind of respect that you're there to work, and they'll let you watch.
Yep.
And it's, you know, it's all consensual, but they don't expect you to participate. Yep. You could.
There's a level of respect that they're not going to draft you or convince you to join.
Yeah, like
in.
You have to be there, and they're doing what they're doing. So I had this expectation that it would be people who, you know, maybe they are bisexual, but they like their monogamous relationship that they have the rest of the time. Mm-hmm. So this is like a way to fulfill that need. Maybe they want to have some orgies or something like that. And it wasn't. It wasn't that. It was a bunch of people that... I hate to say it, but the one I was at, and it was just the one, was that basically it was kind of like the one person was cheating on their significant other, and that person was just like at the bar drinking. It wasn't at all what I thought would be, or maybe I thought people would be into like voyeur stuff or whatever, and it wasn't that at all.
Hmm.
So I was disappointed because I wanted to see some orgies. But I do think at that fetish convention we saw a couple, right?
Do you remember there was a tent and there's a sign that said like, come in and fuck me?
I remember there was a woman in a sex swing, and there was a sign there and a line of people, strangers,
yeah.
waiting to fuck her. And I remember the tent, and I remember exactly what the sign said, Scooter, which was Linda's gangbang, 11 o'clock, open to the public.
I don't remember that. That's
shout
so
out, Linda.
And it was so funny.
I remember that someone was setting a woman on fire, and she was screaming.
They were setting people on fire. There was
sensual fire.
Yeah, like. People on all the contraptions. People were being pierced. And what was really fun, so we performed during the dinner, and then it was like four blocks from the White House at like the Hyatt Regency in DC, the lower levels, and there was like soccer conventions upstairs, and then downstairs was all these freaks. It was really funny.
They're all one big orgy anyway. So.
Yeah, and there was just mattresses all over and condoms all over, and the whole room smelled like sex, and then there's all this stuff going on, and you could just kind of meander through. But we went there with a whole group of people to perform, so it was Scooter, it was me, it was this other, it was your friend, who was like a porn star, and the magicians. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was getting to. So there was these two magicians from Harlem. And they were both like, they were young, they were underage. They were like 19.
But you know, I fucked one of them eventually, though.
I don't, but I'm still friends with one of them. Maybe
that's the one.
Okay, so he and I are still friends, and I remember saying to them, don't touch anything.
No, 19 is not underage.
I think they were supposed to be 21 to be at this event.
Oh, okay. No, but I was thinking, like, you know, at 18 onwards, you can pretty much do anything what you want except for drink.
Okay.
Or vote.
Well, anyway, from here. So yeah, so we were so interested.
No, I mean, orgies and threesomes has always been a fascinating concept for me. I think maybe a threesome will be kind of in my soft bucket list, but I'm not going to seek out an orgy. It's like, personally, if I don't satisfy everybody involved, I'm going to disappoint myself.
Would you have a threesome with a woman and another man?
I've thought about it. The polyamorous girl kind of made me think a little bit more about it, but
why did she ask you for that?
No, definitely not. But
you just started thinking about that?
Yeah, because the idea is you have to be open to whatever scenario.
No, that's not true.
And, no, I mean, you have to at least talk about it. And so if she asks me, hey, there's another dude, are you comfortable or whatever?
All poly people are in having.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, that was what my mind gravitated towards, because, like I said, at that point, I wasn't really educated. I'd never even experienced said word in my day-to-day life. And then I just had to think whatever that I want. I wanted to expand my brain. I'm not going to be opposed to it. I'm not going to say never, but it'll take a little bit. It'll take a lot of trust for me to be able to have a relationship where we can bring in another person. It's hard enough for me to think about another girl in my situation, but even more another guy. But I'm not saying that it's a hard blocker.
You're kind of vanilla, especially by comparison to Scooter.
A comparison to you, of course, yeah.
To me?
And Scooter, even like triple. But you know what?
That's funny.
I'm open to learn.
Well, what I love about Scooter,
yeah.
Scooter is so curious about everything. Yeah. And so I don't think you're judgmental at all, Scooter, and you're just, you know,
not at all.
Trying to understand and learn.
It's not even like I have this out of control sex drive. I'm just really curious about
sex. So one thing that you told me that has stuck with me was when you were working in New York, most of your clients were a certain type of person. Do you remember? Do you remember what kind of person?
Kind of thinking.
Guys that worked in finance? I don't know.
No, it was men that, like, I remember you telling me one liked having his toenails painted.
Okay. Oh, I haven't encountered that in Philadelphia, but when I worked as a dom in what is called Dungeon Alley, although many are closed now, in New York, there were a lot of Hasidic Jewish men who were clients of ours. Ooh. Is that what you were looking for?
That is what I was looking for. And what did most of them want? Like, tell me, just tell us a little bit about that.
I didn't see a lot of them. But, you know, like corporal punishment stuff. Hmm. But that's actually my one story with the toenail painting is I had a challenge because there was one client, I'd never seen him before, never saw him again after this. And he said he wanted to be physically humiliated, but he didn't want like any kind of, like, he had really specific specifications. He said he wanted like not pain and not even so much verbal humiliation. He wanted, quote, physical humiliation. So I just was thinking, I'm like, what would work for this guy? And so I just, because he wasn't in cross-dressing, so I like painted his toenails and then it made him come.
On his toenails?
No.
He's not that flexible, I guess.
But oftentimes you are doing the strap-on thing, right? Regardless of their fetish?
No. I'd say maybe, and it's a thing I specialize in. There's a lot of doms that don't want to do it. No, it's not. I'd say maybe about a quarter of the time for me, or maybe even less.
Okay.
It goes away. Sometimes a lot, sometimes not a lot.
And then with those other fetishes, they're masturbating.
Sometimes they are allowed to touch themselves, and sometimes they're not even interested. Some guys don't even take their clothes off. They just are so focused on, like, doing their fetish thing. And so other guys are especially more like, I guess, there's so many fetishes. And some masochists, they just get off on the pain and they don't even get hard and they don't even want to touch themselves or come at all.
And do you have clothes on?
Yes, I am not ever naked. I like my outfits.
That's amazing. So you're both wearing your outfits and they're concentrating on their fetish and they don't even do anything. So that's something that I think people don't really realize about.
There are guys like that. Yeah, but I mean, other ones they want to get off.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of the dominatrices that I photographed over the years, most of them maybe sheer outfit, but most of them are fairly covered.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like,
it's the tease.
It's, and also it's basically it's the whole package. You can't just be naked and they'll get their money's worth. They need the actual cerebral inner feeling drawn out of them. So
it's that's such a weird mind fuck. It was a weird mind fuck just to do briefly, even, and to sort of, you know, separate that from everything else. How do you feel DOMs are represented in films and television? Do you feel like it's accurate?
I think there's a lot of different depictions. I think there are more and more. Somebody recently asked me when I told him I was a dom. His first go-to was, "There's a depiction of a pro dom in the TV show Transparent," and I guess it's kind of like that. But she's only in a couple episodes. But she only sees like female clients. I'm trying to think of other name some things that there are doms in that I can like draw from.
Billions. Do you watch Billions?
I've never seen that show.
Okay.
Is it good?
I heard it was really good, but I haven't seen it.
It's pretty good. Yeah. What about, so you mentioned 50 Shades of Grey before.
That's universally panned as not accurate at all.
Yeah, it's not realistic, not accurate. I mean, I'm sure it's good. It's great in that it opened up a conversation for a lot of people to get them interested in it in a mainstream way. Like, for example, I got to be on the TV show 2020 because of that book. Because I was teaching workshops with this group called Dommy Dolls for a while. And we got to do a special workshop that was shown on the TV show because people were suddenly interested.
But in general, though, like, do you find that it's more and more socially acceptable to have this particular profession? Because I mean, I've only been in New York 7 years. But when I first started,
I don't know. Go ahead.
No, when I first started, when I moved to New York, most of the people that I started photographing are exotic dancers, dominatrixes, a bunch of male order brides and whatnot. And during that time, it was very hush hush. It was very like they had two separate lives and they dressed so differently at their day job and their night job. And over the years, I found that, you know, and I'm very happy that even sex work has been, you know, a little bit more of a conversation. There's no longer like that immediate negative connotation, although it's still there, but it's not as prevalent as before in my eyes. But you in the actual community, in that actual profession, how do you feel, you know, in your environment and community?
I think that more people are aware of what it is. If I just say I'm a pro dom, they might have some idea of what it is without being totally clueless. But I think there's definitely still, there's a stigma, as has been mentioned, about sex work in general that I think, unfortunately, is going to remain for a long time. But I think even if it's, like, not the best depictions, at least, like, there are, like, there's more and more visibility of what it's like to do this as a job. And there'll be just more understanding. Because, you know, I mean, like, there is taboo about it. Like, my family doesn't know that I do this at this point in my life.
But your partners do.
Yes. I definitely wouldn't keep it because it's like I'm not ashamed, but it's just there's certain people who like wouldn't
be able to cope with it,
right? And at this point,
okay. So I know one thing that we're probably going to get follow up questions about. Can you tell us? Would you be willing to tell us what someone, not necessarily for you, but like what the going rate is for? Is it like an hourly thing, or how does it work?
Oh, sure. Well, I can tell you. The rate in for Philadelphia, it's at the place where I work for an hour, it's the tribute, as we call it, is $260 for an hour.
Okay, and in New York City, what was it?
I think, like, it ranges between, like, $200 and $300, and maybe more depending on who you see.
Okay. And you get, like, a commission on that. Do people tip on it?
The good ones do.
All right.
So because, you know, it's like any service thing. Like, with, you know, if you work as a hairstylist, you do a good job, like, people should tip. It's like that. They should give their
20%. Okay.
20%. Right. And are there, can you upsell?
No. Oh, I guess, no, you can in a way. You can ask if they want to extend for longer.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, I mean, in my brain now, it's kind of like, it's definitely kind of any other service job too.
It's a business.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Providing a service that not everybody can do. Do you find that it fucks with your head ever?
I think as far as, like, I have moments of thinking, like, am I participating? Because there is the shame, or if people are hiding this from their partners, like, is there a darkness to it? Am I taking on dark energy? If other people have judgments about what I do, is that bad? And also, like, I'm a sober person. Like, is this, I mean, it does not make, like, I love doing this job. It's not like, oh, I can't do it without being fucked up kind of thing. But, like, it's like, is this, like, a, you know, honest and true and good? It's all of these questions. But for the most part, I feel like my work is coming from a good place and that, like, I'm providing a good service. So, and, you know, like, maybe not forever. And it's, like, day by day, like, how I feel about it. It feels, at this point, it feels good.
You don't have to turn it off when you go home. It's just
I don't, because I think it's fun. And yeah. I'm lucky, because I definitely had experiences with burnout. I mean, when I was lucky, and it was back in the day when I was really busy, and, like, the dungeons were really busy in New York, and I maybe would do, like, 6 or 7 sessions in a day and be really exhausted after taking in all that energy, and physically tired, too, because, like, you know, you can get carpal tunnel or, like, pull muscle or something. Yeah. You know, you just take care of yourself. And also, like, some guys will have really... they'll be coming to work out their issues in maybe a way that you should be with, like, a therapist or something. Like, they'll be wanting to. And I'm so lucky. Like, I'm more choosy about who I see. Like, I haven't come across it lately, but if I did, somebody was coming to me with a fantasy that felt really damaging or dark, or, like, based in abuse in a way that felt weird for me, like, I would say no. But I was less choosy in the past, or maybe working at a place where you didn't get to choose as much who you saw and didn't see. And sometimes things would feel a little weird or dark. But that wouldn't be all the time, just, like, once in a while. You'd feel a little off afterward because they, you know, wanted to read up something a little bit more damaging.
So when people take these classes, what are they learning?
Well, I can speak from workshops that I used to teach or help teach. It was safety protocol stuff, like, what to have around, you know, like, scissors if you're tying anything up, like, safe places to strike on the body, what kind of implements to use, some basic bondage knots, and then outfits you can wear, and then scenarios for role play, things like that.
Yeah. Because there are ways to hit someone and places to hit someone and places not to, correct?
Right. If you're doing, like, a hand spanking, you know, it's, like, you can kind of figure out, like, where to stick to on the butt. But if you're using an implement like a flogger, it's, like, you want to make sure that it doesn't wrap around to the front part of the body. And, like, you avoid the kidney area and the spine and stuff like that.
I mean, there's definitely a lot of technical things with regards to anything that will affect or touch a physical body. So it's something that needs to be respected in this particular profession, because it's not just like, hey, I'm bossy, I can be a dominatrix.
Right.
No, there's so much training involved and years of practice that it's pretty intense.
Do you feel like you know more about it now, Jonelle?
No, yeah, I mean, I'm always learning more and more about alternative lifestyles and alternative careers, and it's different when you're talking directly to the person, because now I can, you know, my actual real question was the tip part.
Oh, that's funny. I was gonna ask you if you had any more questions, and that was it.
That has always been my Waterloo, because I don't want to ask the person doing the service to you, and I'm talking into a when I first got tattoos in New York, back home we don't tip. So here it's like, wait, I've already paid so much money, am I still going to give?
And you do.
And of course, because I had to ask other people, I had to research, it's like, how much should I tip for this? It's like getting a haircut, it's 20%.
We can do a whole episode on tipping if you want. And basically the answer is always tip.
Always.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Here in this country, yes.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, when I first moved here, that was one of the things that I had to wrap my head around. It was fairly difficult. And then I'm now pleased to know that any kind of service job, you give them 20% if you're satisfied. Have you ever gotten anything lower than 20%, Scooter? This is like a
quick loop. Yeah. Like, you know, they'll give, like, I mean, if they're paying like $200 and $260, or if they give like $20, it's still something, and it's still appreciated.
No, because my follow-up question to that is that because of a review of the service, because I know you're pretty dope, but, you know, you might not be the best for every single one. What if they're unsatisfied with the session? Is there a review process, or they just don't come back?
I think there are. There's a lot of websites with like forums and stuff, but I don't really participate in looking at them. Like Max Fish is one of them, and also probably like on FetLife. Yeah. Which is like a, you know, like Facebook for kinky people.
Yeah.
But I've never like really looked up my reviews. But I think like, you know, if somebody's dissatisfied, they don't have to tip. A lot of guys don't tip, but the cut that I get is decent. I mean, I'm not rich or anything. Unfortunately, things are not as busy as they used to be. But
pre-2008.
Yeah, exactly.
The decade ago.
All right. So tell everybody one more time where they can find Mistress Rita.
Well, I looked it up and I was totally wrong. It's actually at Mistress_Rita. And follow me. And yeah, and look at it's destinieschamber.com and come see me and we'll have fun.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for guesting with us. It was fun. And
very eye-opening.
Very eye-opening for I'm going
to retweet Mistress_Rita for the next 3 weeks.
Thank you.
My 3 followers will definitely follow you back.
All right. I put up some great pictures of my outfits and stuff.
Ah.
Fantastic. We look forward to checking them out, and we're sure our listeners will too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. That's our episode for today. Don't forget to email paradeofdicks@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail. Contact us on all of our social media for your comments, questions, suggestions, and whatever you want to tell the Dick Finder over here.
And share us with your friends.
Yeah. Leave us some stars on iTunes. All right. Bye.
Night.